Good morning, and welcome to our roundtable panel this morning in a special edition as we remember the life of Nelson Mandela. We have an incredible panel before us this morning, plus we will include your phone calls beginning at the half hour at 9:30 this morning. You can get in as soon as you want to at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551, and we will be taking your calls on the life of Nelson Mandela. We are honored to have two incredible experts on the subject with us this morning. We welcome Anders Skotnes. He is professor of history and chair in the Department of History and Society at the Sage Colleges in Troy, New York. He is South African-born, was involved for years in the anti-apartheid solidarity movement, and teaches a course on South African history. Anders, it's great to have you with
Thank
us.
You very
Thank
much.
You so much. Also, we are joined by Albany Law School Dean Penny Andrews. Andrews was born and raised in South Africa. She began studying law in apartheid South Africa before coming to the U.S. in the 1980s. She is co-editor of the book, The Post-Apartheid Constitution's Perspectives on South Africa's Basic Law, the foreword to which was written by Nelson Mandela. And it's a great pleasure to have you with us once again. It's always
Thank
a delight
you.
To have you before our microphones.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Let us begin. And again, we welcome your comments at roundtable at wamc.org. And, of course, we will take your phone calls at 800-348-2551, beginning in just a few moments. Let us begin by how Nelson Mandela has obviously been ill for a very long time, 95 years old. So we really have had time to prepare for this in many ways. And yet, when the news came yesterday, I think it puts all those emotions in high gear. And I'm curious, I'm beginning with you, Penny, of how it struck you.
For me, just a tremendous sense of sadness. Sadness that it is the end of an era in South Africa and globally. And I've been struck even more by the outpouring of grief. Nelson Mandela was a great man. We know that. It's been recorded. But since yesterday, it's been incredible to see the rest of the world respond to, you know, this icon of the 20th and 21st century. So I think that the emotions are so, it ranges from grief, sadness, but also great joy. We have a wonderful life to celebrate. I mean, Nelson Mandela is truly one of history's greatest people. So the celebration is amazing. And as a South African, I just feel so terribly proud to be a South African and know that my country has produced somebody of this caliber. Now, I know that we have in South Africa produced many leaders, but Nelson Mandela is a South African. And for me, I want to shout from the mountaintops that I'm so proud that he is, you know, one of us.
And Andor?
Well, I agree with Penny in terms of both the sadness and also the sense of celebration. Mandela was very important to me. I was born in South Africa, of a South African English-speaking family, still have family there. But in this country, I grew up with my dad, who's South African-born, and he became staunchly anti-apartheid. But my father always said, you just don't know the mind of the white racists in South Africa. This is not going to change without a bloodbath, without an Armageddon. And in fact, there was plenty of blood spilt in the struggle, but the Armageddon never came. And many people were responsible for that, but Nelson Mandela was probably the primary person. And so for that reason, he's been very important in my life, and he's a very important symbol and a very important person. So, and I think that's something we need to celebrate.
I think, and this is tagging on to something that you had mentioned, Penny, about how the impact felt around the world. It has been so tremendous of every corner of the world, because he was a symbol, and a symbol of someone who could be a peaceful liberator of a very torn place.
Yes, I think that Nelson Mandela, what he managed to achieve, both symbolically and substantively was amazing. You're right. You spoke about the bloodshed that people predicted. And South Africa's transition wasn't easy. But under the stewardship of Nelson Mandela, and may I say Bishop Desmond Tutu as well, yes. And he's, you know, that cohort of leaders, I think South Africa really was very fortunate. And if somebody asked me yesterday what Mandela meant to me, and I think that he represents and means reconciliation and peace. He was so committed to this project of reconciliation and forgiveness. I think one of the most iconic images is Nelson Mandela actually greeting and forgiving his jailers. That symbol of forgiveness is so profound that I find that I come back to that often when I meet people who are angry. Or angry at something, and I my response is always, you know, if Nelson Mandela could forgive his jailers after 27 years, you know, I think you can forgive this person who did, you know, whatever.
So let me ask you both this question, and that is, even with him as a symbol and him being able to do that, do you, because to me it's still, I would have trouble forgiving them now for what they did to him, and it wasn't even me. Do you know what I mean?
It's
a difficult thing to come to terms with.
Yes. I think the idea is because it's such a powerful human instinct to be bitter and angry.
Yes.
Nelson Mandela is almost extra human by not being bitter and angry. And I think that South Africans have struggled, particularly with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is a byproduct of Nelson Mandela's philosophy. South Africans have struggled with it because forgiveness and reconciliation is often secondary to revenge. And we see this in the world that we live in now, that people are fighting about their ethnicity and their religion, when Nelson Mandela was so clear that that was not something that was going to divide us. So him just being, and the steadiness with which he has held South Africa to those ideals through very difficult times, I think is quite remarkable. It's a real gift to us. And I think he is responsible for that. The sadness for me is that I worry that him being there and his symbolism, that this will be a call for us in South Africa and around the globe to actually continue his legacy and not let his legacy die with him.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think that the forgiveness is an amazing thing, and it's very important to remember. But you have to remember it along with the fact that Nelson Mandela was a stalwart. He was absolutely committed to the liberation of South Africa and the defeat of apartheid. And even in the years after he came out of prison, in the very difficult years of the transition to the presidential election and so forth, while very forgiving and promoting reconciliation, he was always looking in pragmatic and strategic ways to win the struggle. And ultimately he did. And many people don't realize that in the period from, 1990 to 94, when the election took place, things were up for grabs. Apartheid was not ended. There was still an enormous struggle going on. The Afrikaner elites pretty much thought they were going to pull it out of the bag and somehow have a post-apartheid state that's reinstituted much of apartheid. And Nelson Mandela's power as a stalwart, committed, ultimately revolutionary, is something that we also have to understand.
When it comes to his presence, for both of you growing up in South Africa, how large did that presence loom?
Well, for me, it wasn't large during growing up, because by the time I grew up, Nelson Mandela was in prison. And
right.
In fact, when I became an adolescent, he'd been in prison for over a decade. And for me, somebody like Steve Biko of the Black Consciousness Movement was a powerful political influence. But to some extent, there was a transition or a connection from Steve Biko, Black Consciousness, to the ANC. And so I only really met the ANC, members of the ANC, once I came to the United States as a graduate student, because the ANC was banned in South Africa. And in fact, in South Africa, I would say during the 60s and certainly the early 70s, there was a blackout, a public blackout on Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress and the Pan-Africanist Congress. And so to some extent, this was this mysterious figure. And then in the 80s, he became less mysterious and more iconic as the world and the anti-apartheid movement in the UK, Europe, Australia, the United States, everywhere in the world, sort of took on Nelson Mandela as the world's political prisoner that ought to be liberated, and the Free South Africa movement really took off. And so he has meant, and he has been an iconic figure for all of us for so long. I feel very fortunate that the first part of my life, Mandela was sort of absent in many ways, physically and, but not symbolically.
But there was an awareness, right? I mean, you knew.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Knew he was, absolutely. And he was, you know, people sort of, what he stood for was always clear. But in the 60s, I think that when you look at, I mean, Ando mentioned this, in the 60s, the 70s in South Africa, the possibility, even the 80s, the possibility that Nelson Mandela would walk out of prison to become the president of South Africa, even though we all dreamt about it, it seemed like a dream. It sort of, it seemed impossible until it became inevitable.
Right.
And so I think that he always meant something. But it was sort of, you look at it sort of somebody, it's almost as if you have an outer planet that moves closer to the Earth, and then suddenly he's right amongst us. And I see that as the way that Nelson Mandela has been in the consciousness of South Africans, of my generation, and the globe, I think.
I'd like to explore that inevitability in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. We welcome your phone calls. We'll take those at the bottom of the hour. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK1, 1-800-348-2551. We welcome your phone calls, and we welcome your comments at roundtable@wamc.org. We are remembering the life of Nelson Mandela this morning. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WMC comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York. A classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Vincent Torres Hudson Valley Piano Center, Poughkeepsie. Featuring Yamaha's Avant Grand Hybrid and Clavinova digital pianos that combine acoustic and digital technology. VincentTorresPiano.com. Oblong Books, presenting Simon Winchester with his book, The Men Who United the States, a Center Gloss Festival event, Saturday, December 7th, 7 p.m. in Rhinebeck, oblongbooks.com. And the Town Crier Cafe, in the Hudson Valley since 1972, now open on Main Street and Beacon with live American roots, jazz, and world music, and with locally sourced contemporary cuisine, TOWNECRIER.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our special edition of a roundtable panel. This morning we are talking to experts who are helping us remember Nelson Mandela this morning. Again, we welcome your phone calls at 800-348-2551. Joining us this morning, Albany Law School Dean Penny Andrews. Andrews was born and raised in South Africa. She began studying law in apartheid South Africa before coming to the U.S. in the 1980s. She is co-editor of the book, The Post-Apartheid Constitutions, Perspectives on South Africa's Basic Law, the foreword to which was written by Nelson Mandela. Andor Scottness also joins us. He's professor of history and chair in the Department of History and Society at the Sage Colleges. And Troy is from South Africa, was involved for years in the anti-apartheid movement, and teaches a course on South African history, and it's a pleasure to welcome them both to the program. So we were talking about, I'm keying into something that you said, Penny, about it being, when he came out and becoming president, of being inevitable, and I think that's fascinating to me, that you know, you have this hope, but then the movement becomes so large that it just becomes so.
Yes, yes, which is sort of, it's so interesting after Mandela, after 1990, and he started traveling around the world, there was this idea of young people who were born way after he had been sent to prison, mm-hmm. and the music around him, the popular art forms, and how he became a celebrity. And people from across all walks of life, not just from the anti-apartheid movement, but, you know, models and musicians and, you know, people who we would not necessarily describe as political, took Nelson Mandela as their mentor, their friend, their symbol, and so on. So I think that his capacity to reach across cultures, to reach across genders, to reach across ages, to reach across ethnicities, and so on, is just remarkable. I cannot think of any other global figure, political figure who's been able to do that. And I think that's one of his greatest gifts as well, to be able to reach into people who have no idea of where South Africa might even have been, you know, people in the furthest right. part of the globe. I remember in 1990, I traveled to Vietnam. And, you know, Vietnam had not yet been receiving huge numbers of visitors and so on. And I said I was from South Africa, and people didn't know South Africa. But then I said Mandela, and they knew what I was talking about. Right. So I think that that's became, you know, his normalness, his normalcy is quite profound.
And in many ways, you're a byproduct of what Penny was just talking about, in the sense of becoming of age at this time and becoming politically active both in South Africa and in this country.
Yeah, actually, I wasn't politically active in South Africa. I was very young when I left South Africa, but I became increasingly politically active and then increasingly involved in the anti-apartheid movement in the U.S., largely because of my experiences in the civil rights movement and then the anti-war movement. And so in some ways, I learned my anti-apartheid politics here in part of the international struggle against racism. I did want to pick up on something that Penny said, though. Even though I was in the United States during this period, in many ways for me, initially, people like Steve Biko and the Black Consciousness Movement in South Africa of the 70s and the 80s were more important in terms of bringing me to liberationist politics to support the National Liberation Movement. And Mandela, I knew who Mandela was, but Mandela came a little bit later. So in that sense, you're right. I was a part of this when Mandela started to surface again in a certain sense in the mid-80s, and then, of course, when he came out, you know, he became the focus. But I am a little concerned. I think it's wonderful that there's a celebration of Mandela around the world, and there has been for quite a while. But I'm a little worried that when we celebrate Mandela so much, we forget about other people and other things, things like Steve Biko, things like the Black Consciousness Movement in South Africa, things like many other ANC leaders, because Mandela never did this alone, Walter Sisulu, Oliver Tambo, and so forth. I mean, he was part of a group, of a shifting group, perhaps. So it's great to lionize. It's a great victory to the Mandela is being lionized now, but we mustn't allow that, number one, to forget all of the others. He was a part of a grouping and a movement. And number two, we mustn't forget, allow this to forget how utterly radical his history was.
Mm.
And I think I absolutely agree with that Nelson Mandela is part of a larger movement, and there were people before him, next to him, and so on, people like Steve Biko and others, who created all of this, made this possible so that young people, you know, became interested. And in fact, the Black Consciousness Movement almost delivered a young population to the ANC. But despite that, I think that the reason we focus on Mandela, it's not just so much the man, the individual, the leader, but what he represents fundamentally. And those values, those principles are what I think we celebrate as well. So it's not just him, this one man who did it all, but this one man who managed to group together and take from this important radical movement the transformative possibilities of a new South Africa. And I think because he was such a transformative figure that makes him this iconic a symbol. But I agree with Andor that he is part of a much larger set of individuals, movements, and so on.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will start to take phone calls, and we welcome you to join in on our conversation. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. We are talking about the life of Nelson Mandela, who passed away yesterday at the age of 95. We welcome your comments as well, roundtable at wamc.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this morning. We welcome you as we remember the life of Nelson Mandela this morning. We have two incredible guests with us. Andor Skotnes is professor of history and chair in the Department of History and Society at the Sage Colleges, South African born, involved for years in the anti-apartheid solidarity movement, and teaches a course on South African history. We're also joined by Albany Law School Dean Penny Andrews. Born and raised in South Africa, she began studying law in apartheid South Africa before coming to the U.S. in the 1980s. She's co-editor of the book, The Post-Apartheid Constitutions, Perspectives on South Africa's Basic Law, the foreword to which was written by Nelson Mandela. Did you ever meet?
I met Nelson Mandela in Johannesburg in 1991. It was at some event in Johannesburg. And one of the things that struck me about him was his capacity to make people feel like they were old friends. You know, when you met him, he I was so shocked because I thought that, you know, I'd certainly not met the man before, but somebody told me that he sort of meets so many people and that he finds it, he thinks that people might be offended if he'd met them before and he doesn't recognize them. So he treats everybody as if they his best friend. And I thought that was such a wonderful, wonderful quality, this warmth that he had. Yes, but I was very fortunate. The people who were my mentors, my first boss in South Africa at a public interest law firm in Johannesburg that I worked at, Arthur Chaskelson, who became the Chief Justice of South Africa, was one of Nelson Mandela's attorneys in the treason trial in the early 60s. And then there were other people, George Bisos, Ismail Mohammed, all these people who were sort of senior members of the bar when I was a young attorney and when I was a law student. So I felt very fortunate to have been around people who were close to him and who, you know, worked with him. So that was the connection.
Andor, did you ever meet or see him?
No, I never.
Did you see him ever?
No, I never saw him. Yes. I never saw him. I saw him on television.
Yes.
I watched him leaving Polsmore Prison. I watched him going to Cape Town and speaking from City Hall and so forth. But no, I never met him.
We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. Let us begin with Marie in Albany. Marie, good morning, and thank you very much for holding. I appreciate it.
Good morning, Joe. It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm calling, first of all, good morning, Penny. I have met Penny before.
Yes, good morning, Marie.
The thought came to me, of course, we're all very sad, and as Penny so well said, there is also a certain joy about the life of Nelson Mandela. The thought occurred to me today that I have voted for him in 1994, and was happy that the ANC became the party and that he became our first black president in South Africa. I am South African born. And then I was also lucky enough to later on, as an American citizen, which is the second time I was able to vote for a president, I voted for Obama, who also became the first black president of his country. Mm-hmm. So I thought for me personally that piece of history was very interesting. And I just wanted to express that Mandela has turned around the bitter hearts of many white people who were Christians and thought that he's a communist and they could never agree with him. He turned them around and taught them that leadership and power can also come along with forgiveness and reconciliation, and that is monumental.
I agree with Marie. Yes, I think that the one thing that people maybe forget is that Nelson Mandela liberated black South Africans, but he also liberated white South Africans. And I think that was so powerful that the burden of apartheid, even though white South Africans, as Marie pointed out, were opposed to Mandela and were the beneficiaries of apartheid, once apartheid went and Mandela became the president, I think a huge burden was lifted from white South Africans too. And I think that's his legacy. And like Marie, I became an American citizen in 2008, so I voted for Barack Obama too, and of course voted for Nelson Mandela in 94. So thank you, Marie.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you very much for the telephone call. That is kind of incredible when you think about being able to be a part of those moments in history.
Yes, yes. I feel so privileged that sort of the course of my life, to some extent, tracked South Africa, you know, the liberation in South Africa. I was very involved between 1990 and 1994, spending a lot of time in South Africa, working on constitutional development with people, working with women's groups. So I think that, you know, who gets to be involved in something that's real and changing and transformative? So I feel very privileged.
We go back to the phones and go to Nick in Niskayuna. Nick, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, and hello, Dean Andrews and Professor Innes, I guess it was.
Scott Innes, yes.
I was one of those people in my early teens who read Nelson Mandela's book. I have an image of his picture on the cover as a much younger man, participated in what I think was one of the first divestiture demonstrations against a large international bank whose headquarters were in Manhattan. And this was in the early 60s. And it was one of those very scary situations because we were actually attacked by counter demonstrators. The professor was talking about how the Black Power movement in South Africa, inspired by Nelson Mandela and then furthered by Stephen Biko, created a momentum of change. And very similar things are happening here because the anti-apartheid movements here got involved with the anti-war movement and then the Black Power movement. And Nelson Mandela was really the person who inspired a great deal of that. And he also made South Africa, you know, bringing, fast-forwarding, I'll never forget the monumental decision of the South African Supreme Court that struck down the capital punishment statute and ruled it unconstitutional. I believe it was over 130 pages. It cited law authority from all over the world, and it was just a monumental decision. And so Nelson Mandela's legacy, if you will, is as monumental as a person's can be.
Nick,
he does belong to the ages.
Thank you very much for the telephone call.
Yeah, let me pick up on one thing that Nick reminds us of when he talked about his involvement in the divestiture campaign and the anti-apartheid movement. Again, I'm a little concerned that the celebration of Mandela, which is so deserved and important, helped people to forget some history that shouldn't be forgotten. And what I wanted to raise with this is we have to remember that the anti-apartheid movement in this country was in part fighting the U.S. government, because the U.S. government very consistently supported the apartheid state, largely through the 1980s, especially the Reagan presidency was very opposed to any kind of divestiture, any kind of boycotts on South Africa. But in general, the United States, for Cold War reasons, supported apartheid, and in fact, the United States lent aid to repressing the ANC and the forces of liberation, at least through the 70s and in part after that. So I'm a little concerned that when we hear all of these U.S. politicians lionizing Nelson Mandela as if they, these politicians, somehow were with him or their system was somehow with him all the way down the road or somehow Nelson Mandela brought the American system, the U.S. system, South Africa. I think it's really important to remember that that the United States' role in terms of the liberation of South Africa was at best very mixed.
We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Christina from Hudson checks in and asks if our guest could briefly discuss the colonial history of South Africa and how apartheid came about. Also, what does post-colonial apartheid in South Africa look like now?
the term brief. Post-colonial apartheid. Yeah. Well, sort of a brief, the first European settlers in South Africa were the Dutch in 1652, who brought across slaves from Malaysia and Indonesia, Java, and many of the descendants of those slaves are now would be classified as colored people in South Africa, mostly in Cape Town. And then South Africa became a British colony, and everybody knows about the Boer War, in which the Afrikaners, who later became the ruling group in South Africa, actually lost to the British. I think the most profound things, if one wants to sort of chop up South African histories, is sort of colonialism and apartheid and then democracy. And under the British colonial authorities, there was apartheid. It wasn't It wasn't as brutal and as systemized as it was after 1948, but we remember things like the 1913 Land Act, when in fact South Africa's land was taken from the majority of South Africa's people, from the indigenous people, and in an illegal land grab, really, under the guise of law, took away the land of the majority of South Africa's people. And the consequences of the 1913 Land Act has been felt, up until today. Sure. And then, of course, in 1948, when the Afrikaners came to power, they instituted a system that was brutal to the core and really sort of, I would call colonialism soft apartheid, and then apartheid, they really prioritized personal relationships and every aspect of South African identity in the grand scheme of apartheid. They were also brutal in that they instituted a security system in which, the Terrorism Act, the Internal Security Act, in which people really, the censorship laws, in which people really had no fundamental civil and political rights. And then, of course, the new transition to democracy, in which we have a system of constitutional democracy in which political power is vested in the black majority. But I would say that economic power is still very much in the hands of the white population. There has been some movement, but I cannot sit here and say that economic apartheid has been done away with. I think South Africa still suffers from huge economic inequalities which have a racial component, and that the kinds of dreams of a new South Africa have not been met if one looks at the statistics of poverty, who is poor, who are the most disadvantaged, who are unemployed, who cannot go to decent schools, and so on. So I think that it's South Africa is still a society in progress towards ultimate democracy and equality, but I think we are on the journey. Mm. Whether we're at station number, if we say 1 to 10, whether we're at station number 2 or station number 6 may be debatable, but we're certainly not at station number 10.
We're not all the way there.
Yeah, I think... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that what Penny just said was an excellent brief summary. And I'd just like to sort of reinforce what I see as the essence. South Africa today and apartheid South Africa before it is the product of a long process that at its core was European colonialism and the construction of a white settler state or states in South Africa. So it's the Dutch, it's the British, it's the period of the Union and so forth. The essence of all of that had to do with the dispossession of indigenous people, the enslavement of indigenous people, the use of indigenous people in terms of subordinated and dependent labor. And then the legalization in this elaborate Byzantine system under the apartheid state after 48, of all of those things. So much of that, at least on the political level, has been dissembled and destroyed. But I really want to support what Penny says about the economic effects of apartheid are still incredibly profound. South Africa is the richest country in Africa, but the income disparity is enormous. Ownership is enormously unequal. And while the top levels have become somewhat integrated, they're not as white as they used to be. There are more African and black entrepreneurs and affluent people and so forth. The masses of the people in South Africa continue in a very deprived state. And this is a big problem.
We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Also, your phone calls. There are lines open, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, a line open. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll get to your phone calls after the short break.
Support for WMT comes from Casual Set Stuyvesant Plaza, featuring modern women's fashions and accessories serving the capital region for over 40 years. 518-482-7136. Sunflower Natural Food Market, Woodstock, accepting pre-orders for humanely raised organic and natural holiday turkeys, locally made pies and organic produce and fixings. 845-679-5361, extension 1. And Vertex Sales and Design in the A&P Plaza, Pleasant Valley, New York, offering custom designs and installation of kitchens, bathrooms, and home renovations, a new kitchen and 7days.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel as we remember the life of Nelson Mandela. And just a reminder that coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, we will be playing an NPR special, Mandela, an audio history, that at 11 o'clock this morning. Then at 2 o'clock, Dr. Alan Chartok and Ray Graff will be hosting a special Vox Pop. Normally, we do not have Vox Pop on Friday. We will today. So if we don't get to your calls right now, certainly we will be talking about this subject in depth again at 2 o'clock this afternoon in a special Vox Pop from 2 to 3, and you can take part in that program as well. All of that on WAMC Today. We'll have new news updates throughout the day, and of course, Midday Magazine at noon with Brian Shields. Our guests this morning, Andor Scottness, Professor of History and Chair in the Department of History and Society at the Sage Colleges, and Albany Law School Dean Penny Andrews, our guests. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org and on the phone at 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Rabbit in Cherry Valley. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just have a short personal comment to make. I grew up in suburban New Jersey, and my older sister in 1966 wrote an English paper about apartheid, and her English teacher had never heard of it. And it started me on a journey of understanding and growth, and I'm just grateful that I could be in the world when he was in the world.
Rabbit, thank you very much for the comment. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to Heather in Clifton Park. Heather, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you very much, and hello to both your South African guests this morning. So glad that we can commemorate what Mandela has meant to all of us. Like your guests, I grew up in South Africa. I was a teenager there in the 60s and very confused about being anti-apartheid, nervous of an armed struggle in South Africa to achieve their ends. I loved what Penny said about a liberation for all people in terms of trying to come to terms with the evil of apartheid and how we can live and what we can do to improve our lives. Living here in the United States, what I really believe is there was, I think that South Africans suffered not only the obvious things of apartheid, but I think whites grew up with a sense of entitlement, which I think is despicable anywhere. And I hope that to honor the memory of Mandela and the downfall of apartheid, people like ourselves living in the United States can help to achieve a society here where we can help to alleviate people's sense of entitlement because of their skin color or where they came from or when they emigrated into this country, and honor what Mandela was trying to do in creating a really democratic society in which everybody would be welcome and equal. And I think in this way, we can help to honor the memory of this man.
Beautiful. Heather, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Let's go over to Bruce in Ulster. Bruce, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. I would like to hear the two experts talk about the part that music and song and maybe dance, but especially music played in the struggle. I became aware of Steve Biko because of the song Biko that I heard played, which was so powerful. And also a few years ago, several years ago at the Woodstock Film Festival, there was a documentary. I can't remember quite the name, but it was, began with a Mandela something.
Yes.
And it was again, about the power of music in the struggle against apartheid. And at the end, all these people, especially youth, were singing and dancing down the street, and the audience at the Woodstock Film Festival were on their feet at the end. It was so powerful and so rousing. So again, I would like to hear the two experts talk about the power of music that played in that struggle.
And Penny, you touched on this earlier. It became very much a part of our popular culture, especially in 1985 with Sun City and then later with Paul Simon and Graceland.
Yes, and I think that, I mean, apart from the fact that music has been in many ways, it's so much part of the culture of South Africa. You know, people, music is important. Famous South African musicians, and there's so many, but let me just mention Johnny Clegg, Abdullah Ibrahim, Hugh Masekela. They actually took music as a vehicle for political activism, and they developed and used the idea of music to liberate South Africa and bring consciousness about apartheid. So I think I agree with the speaker that music has been very, very important in both in resistance but also in survival in South Africa.
Yeah, I think I agree with that also. And I think internationally the music was terribly impacting. I remember seeing Hugh Masekela when I was a young man in my teens here in the United States and was very moved by him. But you see, the other thing I think we have to say, and this speaks to the struggle in South Africa as a genuine people's liberation movement, is that as the struggle built over the years of apartheid, music was engaged on the popular level, drawing from the musical traditions of the peoples of South Africa and integrated in the movement. People sang, people toitoyed, people used music as part of their resistance, including when they were resisting physically the oppression of the apartheid state. And that's why people talk about it as this revolution with the music. And I think that movie was Mandla, Liberation?
I know that was the title. Part of the title. But and, of course, everybody knew Free Nelson Mandela, the song that became, iconic in, was it the 90s?
Earlier, I think. Yes. But it's, again, when we think of South Africa, we have to think of this broad popular liberation movement that had a powerful cultural front that skipped beyond its borders but also mobilized people within the borders.
Bruce, thank you very much for the telephone call. Let's move on now in our remaining moments and go to Ed in Hillsdale. Ed, good morning and welcome to the program this morning. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning. I assume that Mandela was an economic radical and that his vision was not the vision of South Africa that exists today economically. And the assumption is that he made a compromise with the South African whites to achieve liberation. If that's true, did he ever make comments recently in the last few years of his life criticizing the situation? And if he had run for a second term, might he have changed these economic policies to make the situation more equal for blacks?
I think two quick things. The first is that I think that Mandela would not have criticized the government, the ANC government in any way, but I do think that Mandela has continued to raise concerns when he was the president and when he stopped being president about the economic inequalities. The thing about the compromise is that, of course, there was a compromise at the beginning because there were no clear winners. The apartheid government was going to dig their heels in forever and the ANC was not going to be able to overthrow the government militarily. So I think that compromise is just the art of politics. That has been the hardest, as I mentioned earlier, in South Africa, to really get to the place that you're talking about where we can talk about economic inequality and really give vent to the dreams of the Freedom Charter and the dreams of Nelson Mandela before he went to prison about economic liberalization and economic equality in South Africa.
Penny speaks of the Freedom Charter, 1955, and it's been striking to me in the last day how seldom the Freedom Charter is mentioned in discussions of Mandela. The Freedom Charter was a document that is utterly fundamental, foundational to the liberation movement. And in it, the Freedom Charter calls for economic equality. It calls for the socialization of basic wealth in South Africa. And that remained Mandela's vision through his time in prison. And when he came out of prison, he was very, very reluctant not to attempt to move right away to start nationalizing the mines and the land. And he was ultimately talked out of it because the situation would not permit it. So I think that vision, and, you know, Mandela for much of his life, if not all of his life, was a socialist in his outlook, essentially. But his pragmatism when he was president meant that he gave up certain of the economic radicalism of the Freedom Charter and of the liberation movement. Now, the question is, there is a debate in South Africa and around the world whether too much was given up at that time.
Mm.
And this is a very difficult kind of thing to figure out, because you're trying to carry off, as Penny said, carry off a revolution in, you know, a situation where the balance of forces is not that favorable all the time. But I think the future will tell on that. But certainly what is needed in South Africa now is some real progress toward greater economic equality.
I think, ironically, globalization has in many ways reinforced the inequalities, because the idea of redistribution and nationalization, these are ideas that are no longer in fashion, really. And so it's very important that in South Africa, if South Africa wants to get to a place of economic equality, there has to be some shift in the sort of the consensus and the traditional wisdom about economics. That's a much harder struggle, and it's going on in this country as well.
Albany Law School Dean Penny Andrews and Andor Scottness, Professor of History and Chair of the Department of History and Society at the Sage Colleges in Troy, New York. It has been an absolute delight to have you in our presence this morning and to share with us and with the audience. I so appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure.
Thank you for the show.
Thank you very much. We'll continue with the roundtable. We will spotlight some events that are coming up over the weekend. And then in our 11 o'clock hour, we'll be having a special broadcast on Nelson Mandela. You're listening to the roundtable on WAMC.